Welcome to the Future is Female podcast. On this episode, I'm going to be joined by Kristen Patrick, CMO of Claire's. We're going to talk about how to reinvent your business and yourself. Kristen, welcome to the Future is Female podcast. Now, if anyone hasn't listened before, we always try to speak to the women in the industry who we think have truly amazing stories. And Kristen, you both work for a brand that I'm really fascinated by, and I think you have a very interesting story. So let's dive right in. You're now the CMO at Claire's, but give us some of your personal history. Talk us a little bit through your career.
First of all, thank you for having me. I'm really happy to be here, and talking about women and women's empowerment is one of my favorite subjects. So just really glad to be here. So I have a quite eclectic professional background. I've toggled across several industries. I've spent time in the entertainment industry with Disney and NBC Universal. I've spent time in the omnichannel retail and fashion industry with Calvin Klein, Gap Inc., Liz Claiborne. And I also spent time in the beauty industry. I worked for Revlon. I was the chief marketing officer for Playboy, which I will write a book about someday because I was there when Hugh Hefner was there. And I also was the chief marketing officer for Playboy, which I will write a book about someday because Hugh Hefner was there during my tenure. He was still quite alive. So, and I was also the chief marketing officer for Pepsi at a time when, you know, sugar was becoming the next tobacco. And now I find myself immersed in the most wonderful generation, Gen Z and Gen Alpha, who I lovingly refer to as the Zalphas. And it has been an amazing and wonderful opportunity to learn about, you know, the future of everything through the eyes of this generation.
So I'm going to come back to some of your future jobs because you've had some really, really interesting ones that I think deserve a bit of attention. But let's talk about Claire's up front. Tell me a bit about what the mission was at Claire's when you joined, and what was it that made you want to go there?
You know, I tend to be attracted to turnaround situations and situations where brands or businesses need to be rethought or rejiggered in some way. And for me, Claire's was that opportunity. You know, it's a 60-year-old brand with a massive global footprint. A beloved brand, very high awareness around the world. And it pretty much hadn't evolved or changed in 60 years. And Claire's has always stood for self-expression. And you know, I wasn't about to change that because I do think that that is the right place to, you know, for the brand to focus. And it's such a human and important topic and an important topic for a generation of kids who are all about, you know, fluidity and their identity. And so I knew that continuing that legacy was going to be really, really important.
That's really interesting because I think I bet everybody you speak to, at least women, has a sort of Claire's story of their own. Mm-hmm. And I know for me, Claire's was definitely a place growing up that you felt that for me, who didn't necessarily come from a family with a lot of money, you could get access to fashion in an affordable way that otherwise you might not have been able to. So it's an important link to a culture you wouldn't have otherwise touched, if you see what I mean. What does it mean to the Zalphas of today?
It's an important brand because I think a lot of times people experience it during a rite of passage, which is a first piercing. So you go into a Claire's after, you know, begging your mom or dad to take you in and get your ears pierced. And then what we find is consumers stay with us through first communions and proms and all sorts of, I think, life's activities. And then you end up taking your child back to get their ears pierced. Or you may come in as an adult for a second piercing because you do have sort of fond memories of it. I think that one of the things that has always been true about Claire's and that really resonates with this generation is the ability for you to be whoever it is that you want to be, right? So Claire's doesn't judge. We're just this platform, and you can come in and pick, green haired extensions one day. You could put pink haired extensions in the next, and whatever it is, like whatever it is you want to be, have at it. And I think that that's sort of the beauty of Claire's, like it doesn't judge. And when we were reworking the brand platform and sort of modernizing it for a new generation, there was something really resonant in that for the Zalfas. And the idea that you could be the most intelligent, the most funny, the most creative, the most outrageous, but at the end of the day, whatever it is, just like be the most you and be like the truest sense of who you are. And Claire's will be there and sort of the platform and the cradle for you to go out and explore yourself. So, you know, I think what's so great about Claire's and brands that I admire in general, they have this sort of timelessness about them in their brand positioning. And I knew that walking into Claire's that existed for them.
To go back to the Claire's story that I think that so many people have, and it's interesting to hear how Zalfas are making their own stories today. I actually remember one of the worst things I did was I campaigned to get my ears pierced when I was 8, and against my mother's wishes, she eventually gave in. And then I made my grandmother do it. And so a woman who had spent her whole life not getting her ears pierced, and her 8-year-old granddaughter shamed her, and I made her, you know, that poor woman was unhappy to have pierced her ears for the rest of her life. But it was a great part of my story. I was always like, we share this, Gran. We got our ears pierced together. I don't know how pleased she was. I've got to be honest, Kristen. But I think that's the real appeal of Claire's, is it's somewhere people feel they can go with multi-generations. But thinking about the sort of Gen Alphas of today, it feels like you've taken the brand into new platforms that are more relevant as well. It's not just a retail brand anymore. Tell me a bit about that.
Usually when I walk into a company, I try to understand what from the past is could be resonant for a new generation of consumers. And for Claire's, there was something about the fact that it was about self-expression and, you know, loving yourself and being sort of the truest version of who you are. And I always start with the history, talk to consumers about their feelings. And what they told us was, listen, we really, really like Claire's a lot. And you can go into our lives in more places than how you exist today. So, you know, we're a 3,000 some odd fleet of retail stores, but what I uncovered and discovered was that it was this was actually a brand, and it wasn't just a fleet of retail stores, and it was so much bigger than just its doors. So the question became, how do you unleash and unlock some of the power and equity that this, you know, company had built up over the years? And what consumers told us, and really you have to listen to this generation of consumers, they told us that we could go into more business categories. So they asked that, you know, they have apparel to go along with the accessories. For years, we had dabbled in like home decor and dorm decor. They told us they wanted more of that. They told us that we could give them like lifestyle information and content. There was, you know, a request for more style information and sort of curating trends for them. They also wanted to know about other kids of their generation and what they were doing and feeling. They also wanted to understand a little bit more about who Claire was. So you start to get into like the storytelling of, you know, of Claire and who she is. Is she a real person, or does she really not have an identity and she's kind of all of us? The other thing they did ask for, and we sort of, you know, laughed at this, but I get where they were going. They really wanted cafes. They wanted Claire's cafes from us. You know, probably not a viable business model for us right now, but you know, something that consumers wanted from us. So we take our cues, and I always take my cues from what consumers are asking for.
Yeah, it feels like a real demand for community more than anything else from Claire's. So is there, when you look back at your career, do you think to yourself, is there a theme to your career that you think this is the thread that makes sense to me?
Yeah, when I look back at all of the companies that I'm attracted to or have worked for, there is a thread. And in fact, most of the companies are steeped in culture in some way, whether they're creating culture or they leverage a connection with culture to drive their business. I find myself attracted to companies of that sort. I would say the second theme is that I love to go into businesses at a time when they are ready to pivot, whether it's creating a new vision for the brand, the business, and the company. I tend to like messy situations. And for me, it's a sense of curiosity that's always existed, even when I was younger, to understand like what drives people and what drives the consumer. And so, you know, I went into Revlon at a time when, you know, their color stories, sales had been declining. It's like, how do we sort of fix that? Even Gap, I went into the company after Mickey Drexler left the company. And so it was kind of trying to find its way. I think that, you know, Pepsi, I went in at a time when we had to really transition from television to more of a digital spend. And, you know, how do you get people to drink a beverage that's full of sugar? And what does that mean? What does that look like? Playboy was, you know, at a time when it was taken private. And it was a whole new generation of consumers that were somewhat familiar with the brand, but it was about redefining it. And, you know, same at Claire's, a 60-year-old brand in dire need of, a new facelift and a repositioning. I tend to be attracted to those kinds of things. And in fact, you know, before you and I started our conversation, I was just telling you, I just moved into a new house. I actually rebuilt a house. I found this sort of abandoned gem and, you know, spent the last 2 years completely renovating it and redoing it. So I don't know what that says about me and who I am, but I tend to be attracted to situations like that.
I think it says you may be a high achiever and your therapist would say definitely a fixer. But I think that element of challenge and what success looks like is really interesting, particularly when we're talking about women. Mm. One of the big topics that comes up on this podcast quite a lot is, what does success actually look like as a woman? And is our version of success defined by what men have meant it to be? And is that too narrow? I don't know what you think about that.
I think there's no right answer to what success looks like. I think it's a personal path. And I think that it's distinct and different for every individual. I do think that women have a level of responsibility in dealing with family and other areas that maybe men aren't necessarily thinking about. I also think that in some ways, women have to think about how they're showing up, both in the world and business, how they're dressing, you know, what they look like in ways that probably don't even cross the minds of men. And I think that there is a level of responsibility also in supporting and helping other women that men maybe don't think about or take for granted. So I would say that those are sort of three distinctions.
I agree completely with you. I think that is a situation most women recognize and most men are surprised to hear that it is so intentional on women's part. So you mentioned something really interesting there, which is that next generation of women who are both sort of your customer and, you know, your employees and daughters, relatives, you know, everything. And something that comes up a lot is, what's the value of mentoring compared to sponsoring someone? Some of the younger women I've talked to have said, I really need a sponsor. Mentoring only takes me so far, but sponsoring is something different. What's your take?
I think that there is a distinction between sponsorship and mentorship. In my own experience, when I mentor people, it gets very personal. It very much becomes about decision making in terms of their feelings and emotions and their lives and what they need to overcome, perhaps, you know, or insecurities. Like, to me, it gets very deep into that level of discussion. Sponsorship is the support of actively putting people up for roles and jobs, mentioning their names in opportunities for boards, or, you know, if a recruiter calls to ask about a company, it's giving a true and active support for somebody. And I think that that is a very big distinction.
I agree. And I actually think both of them are important in different ways.
100%.
They play different roles in people's lives at different times. So I think they both matter. The other big one that always comes up is work-life balance. Now, I'm a big believer that I haven't got that at all. I've always get it wrong. And what I aim for is a life that I am okay with. And that is my measure of success. Is this okay for me? Is it flexible enough? Do I feel I'm giving enough in each area of my life that for me, this is something that is acceptable to me? Because I don't feel I can achieve balance and I don't think I can have it all. You know, how do you think about those things?
Very similarly, I do not have great work-life balance, nor have I ever. And it is something that I take very seriously, you know, particularly in raising my daughter. And if I think about my priorities, my family is my number one priority, and you know, love it or hate it, work comes second, but oftentimes it comes first. And I think that, you know, you have to find times when you're going to have to prioritize something else. And I think that that's very hard for in particular women, because as we talked about before, I think that they have a level of responsibility that men don't necessarily have. But, you know, I think it's a little bit easier now that my daughter's in college. I think as you're actively raising children, you know, there's a massive level of guilt that I felt for many years. I think that there is a sense of something is going to get deprioritized. And I think it's very individualistic. And I think that there are times or periods where, you know, I wished that I could have spent more time with my daughter or my family, and you know, had to prioritize other things. And I'm not necessarily proud to say that, but I think that you do what you have to do for your life. And I think that I don't have all the answers, you know, I really don't. And I struggle with it even today. And I think that it's going to be probably a constant battle for me to overcome, and as well as other women.
And you know what, I think it's really important that people in general, men and women, and, you know, women in this instance, talk about this and say it, because I think that idea that there is a work-life balance that if you were just a bit better, you could obtain is sort of unhelpful in itself, because by the nature, you can't do everything all at once. And so, like you say, you do have to shift your priorities.
You have to be a shapeshifter.
You do have to be a shapeshifter.
And you really do. Yeah. And you know, there is this level of guilt that comes along with parenting and working. And, you know, I always worried. I remember when I was young in my career, and it was like 11:30 at night, and I was taking a car service home from New York City out to my home in Stamford, Connecticut. And there was a woman in the car who had a really prolific career. And she was a hard worker, and she had two kids at home. And I said to her, "Don't you feel guilty? Like, I know I really worry about my daughter and, you know, what she's going to see." And she said, "No," she goes, "my kids are great. They're so happy and excited that, like, I'm happy and fulfilled. And, you know, I show up as a better mom." Like, that was kind of her belief. And, you know, sometimes I think that's true, but I also still had this like level of guilt all the time. And like I say, as your kids get older, it gets a little bit easier, but I couldn't relax until my daughter went to summer camp, but I knew that she was like doing something. But I guess that you find ways to ensure that when you're present with them, you are 100% there, and you're not on your phone, and you're really soaking in the moment.
That's true. And I also like to think that I wouldn't like to deprive my children of the years in therapy later. They have to have something to complain about. Otherwise, if I'm too good, yes. Like what are they going to talk about for all those years, you know, after they leave home?
Yes, but indeed.
Exactly. I actually think when I was once I was working, I was traveling a lot. And I said to my son, he was saying, oh, you know, will you be able to pick me up? And I said, I can't actually, I'm on this trip. And he was like, oh, so-and-so's mum will be there. And I felt so awful. And I said, oh, I was like, would you like it if I was there after school every day? And then he was like, what do you mean? What would you do? I'd be busy. He was like, I've got stuff to do, mum. And he was like, that's sweet. Would you want to be there? And I thought, oh, do you know what? I don't know if the guilt is for them or for me, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
So sometimes I think it's good to check in and go, is my guilt actually for me, or yes. Do they feel that?
Yes. And then as my daughter got older, she was so independent. And it's like, and then I was like, oh, well, she doesn't really want to hang out with me anymore, you know? And that used to bother me, but it's like, that's your dream. Like, that's what you want your kids to do. You want them to be like independent and self-sufficient. And so, you know, I definitely think that she learned about hard work, which is definitely a good thing. But yeah, I still have guilty feelings.
You need to do, my own mother, actually, she just sends me research. She was a working single mother, and she likes to send me research showing how daughters of working mothers are just like better sorted out than everybody else on the planet. And I like her marketing to me.
Yes.
I think this is good. I'm like, yeah, I'm ready for this, mum. I enjoy it. So tell me a bit. So you mentioned there guilt. These can be big challenges. Have there been other big challenges you feel you've faced in your career that you feel you've been able to overcome?
I think some of the challenges for me have been somewhat self-impugned. You know, I think that, and I think a lot of women face this and are, you know, willing to talk about it in ways that men aren't. But I always think that, for me, there was definitely imposter syndrome and having to overcome that. You know, I am a very sort of eclectic business leader, both from my background, but in terms of the way that I view the world, the way that I go about problem solving. And I really dive deeply into consumers and emotions and gut instinct in terms of seeing the future, which is very different than I think the way that probably a man approaches a problem. Also, you know, I had to learn how to not blurt out creative visions and ideas, like really how to work a strategy over my career and then take into account the operational aspect of it. So I really had to work very hard to be a better balance between left and right brain, right? So like and sometimes I still even feel that, you know, when I get into a room with a CEO who's all financials all the time, I have to like overcome my feelings of inferiority and know that, like, okay, you are now, you know, one of the senior executives sitting in the room and you have that balance. So I think in some ways my stuff has been self-impugned.
I think that's very common. I'd agree for myself. And I think one of my great friends, the late Suki Thompson, who is a great businesswoman herself, CEO, I remember she was talking about being in rooms with male CEOs who her business style was built on relationships, very good empathy and charm and ability to see the problem, address it and go on. Yeah. And she said, it's weird. Sometimes I'm in rooms and I feel that is not seen as a skill set. Whereas if that's 100% of your business skill set and it's been very financially successful for you, you feel like, I think I'm right, but somehow mm-hmm. I've come up against a group of people who think so differently yeah. that it can be hard to adjust. And I feel my style of leadership is not always as valued as the more standard. And I used to think, how incredible that you're this incredibly successful person and you could feel this at all, because externally it didn't make sense to me. But I think often our limitations are self-belief and generated.
I think they are. And also, like, if you think about the people who have created culture and art and, you know, really moved the world, they were always a little bit different. So, like, who is they that, like, sets the limit in terms of, like, how you're supposed to be or act? Or, you know, as I've gotten older, I like to debunk those myths. And, you know, I think, you know, leaning into more of what makes me different is what I think makes me exceptional. And, you know, it took a long time for me to get there. And I still, you know, sometimes when I, even in current situations, sometimes, you know, I am very different. And I have to just stand my ground.
And I think you look at the success you've had across so many different brands and you go, you have to be a pretty exceptional person to be able to adapt to these different cultures. It takes a skill to be able yeah. to be in each of those rooms. What's still left to do for you in your career?
I want to run a company. I really want to make an impact for this next generation. And, you know, that's very important to me. I have a daughter who's Gen Z. And I think that one of the cool things about this generation is that they are very open about mental health. And yeah. My daughter hates when I tell this story, but, you know, she does have really bad anxiety. And I didn't really understand what that meant. I didn't understand. I thought it was just like stress and I didn't get it. And it is like so profound within this generation. And I really want to work on being a supporter and acknowledger of that. So that is something that I want to really double down on. And then, you know, I've always wanted to start my own business. So I think, like, in my, you know, 70s and 80s, that's something that I want to kind of do on the side. I'm definitely not done by any means. I have, you know, a lot of things that I want to do from a career perspective, but, you know, also from a personal perspective, I found so much joy in building this house. I mean, it was hard, let me tell you, but there's something, you know, I kind of found a new hobby maybe, which is nice. And I also want to make sure that supporting Gen Z and mental health and mental health in general, but I want to continue to be a supporter of women and making sure that, you know, I've got great women friends and a support system around me. That's become more important to me as I've gotten older. I did always have trouble, I think, with women in high school not being kind. And I think that if you have a daughter, you probably see how unkind women can be to each other. I want to make sure that, you know, if there's an opportunity to talk about that or support in any way, I want to make sure that I'm doing that.
Absolutely. And I think I've been lucky enough to have my best friends since my school days. So the great thing is, you have a group of women who could tell you every worst hairstyle you've ever had, the worst 100%. You look, worst boys you dated, but actually they spend most of the time telling you how great you are. And I think that's a kind of amazing thing to be able to give somebody else to when you have those relationships with women.
I think so. And I really want to teach my daughter to do that as well. You know, I have a daughter who is 6'1". She's very, very tall. And, you know, I think for her, sometimes high school could be tough. And I sort of witnessed that with her. And we talk about how to be kind to people and to be supportive of other women a lot. And I've had just the last, you know, really great people in my life, the last, you know, 10, 15 years, I would say, in terms of women and women supporters. So I feel very lucky in that sense. And so I hope I can sort of give back in that way.
100%. And like you said, those things that you feel are your flaws or make you sad can often be your sort of superpowers, whether it's feeling like you don't quite fit in somewhere. So actually you learn to fit in every room because you feel that. Or whether you're 6'1", which is my dream. I'm so short. It's my dream. But, you know, when you're not in high school anymore, people are like, wow, you know, what a person.
So I know.
Those things that you focus on are not forever. And so tell me then, one piece of advice to finish up. What is the piece of advice? Thinking of those Gen Z, Gen Alphas coming into your stores, the ones who are coming into the workplace, what would be the one piece of advice you'd leave them with?
You know, my personal mantra is so simple, and it might sound trite, but it truly is something that I live by, because it's the way that I see the world. But I have a post-it note, a little sticky note on my computer, and I have it everywhere I go, and it just says, trust your gut. Because I need to remind myself, like, you're good enough. You know, you can sit in these rooms and go head to head with, you know, some of the more traditional thinkers. Yes. And I would tell my daughter to trust her gut, you know, listen to that inner voice. And it never steers you wrong. Like, even sometimes, like, if I'm thinking about a career change or a job, like if I get a split second feeling of, you know, something's not right there, like, listen to it. And I think that sort of soul connection or that voice will never steer you wrong.
Perfect. Well, I think that is the perfect way to finish. Kristen, thank you so much for taking us on this whistle-stop tour of your career, of being vulnerable with us, and really sharing some of the things that I think have made you so successful today.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and I really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for joining us. If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider sharing it with a colleague and leaving us a review on your preferred podcast platform. We'll see you again in the next episode.